This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, Now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV.
Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Let's turn our attention to the world of politics. Federal conservatives are calling for an investigation into allegations RCMP Commissioner Brenda Luckey promised Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's office the force would release descriptions of the guns used in the Nova Scotia mass shooting because of impending gun legislation. The allegation was contained in documents released as part of an inquiry into the massacre. Interim conservative leader Candace Bergen says politics should not be at play in a situation like this.
And the reason she did it was because she had made a commitment, or she had been pressured by the Prime Minister's office and or the Public Safety Minister's office. We believe Superintendent Campbell. This is disgusting to know that the Prime Minister and his office would use the death of Canadians for his own political gain.
Public Safety Minister Marco Mendicino says the allegations are not true.
It's important to look to the unequivocally clear statements that were made by the commissioner of the RCMP, who said at no time was there interference on the part of the government. You also heard my predecessor, Minister Blair state very clearly that there was no interference on the part of the government, while at the same time exchanging information so that we could be as transparent as possible with Canadians.
NDP leader Jagmeet Singh says he's troubled the fact that an allegation like this exists at all.
But the fact that there's any question, that there's doubts being raised about the decisions of the government around gun control and whether they were using this incident as a political opportunity, whether there was interference, the fact that this question remains or this question exists is the problem. That is wrong that this is even going on.
First perspective on this story and more going on in the world of Canadian politics. Let's bring in veteran political correspondent Craig Oliver. Hey, good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Dave.
So, Craig, I played some sound there from a few politicians. How big a scandal is this? Is this one that puts a spotlight on RCMP Commissioner Brenda Luckey, the former Public Safety Minister Bill Blair, or maybe even the PMO, the Prime Minister's office?
Yeah, well, if Brenda Luckey, the RCMP Commissioner, did do what one of her own officers has accused her of doing, that is helping the Liberal government with its political agenda on gun control by putting pressure on her officers in Nova Scotia to come up with the details of what weapons the killer used in that tragic 24 or 48 hours. If she did that, she would have to resign. But that is a long way away from being a certainty, and there's a lot to have to work itself out yet. But there's a tenant that has hardly ever, and to my knowledge, been broken, which is that the RCMP is an independent service, an independent police force, and that it takes no orders operationally from the Prime Minister's office or for the government. That can never be broken, or we're on our way to a police state, and we certainly aren't that.
These allegations came out of the Nova Scotia mass shooting inquiry. The Conservatives are calling for an investigation into this revelation. Do you think it's going to lead to another investigation or maybe even another inquiry?
Well, the opposition wants to press ahead with this. I can tell you what would put the commissioner in even worse trouble. There were other RCMP senior officers at this Zoom meeting she had, which, by the way, she says she made a number of misjudgments in that conversation, which became quite ugly. But anyway, if some other officer heard her say what she is quoted as saying in the notes by the senior officer who was there, if that was the case, she would be in great trouble. But that has yet to be worked out. But if one of these officers said, "I heard her say it too," if he corroborated what the chief superintendent said, then she would be in really big trouble.
Mm. Craig, whether or not this ends up in another investigation, an inquiry, maybe even some legal proceedings, or ends up being identified as a legal gray area, politically speaking, isn't this just crass of the Liberal government to be asking to be utilizing descriptions of weapons as part of a legislation or messaging around a legislation?
It's unfathomable why the Prime Minister's office would ask the commissioner of the RCMP to help them with their political agenda, which was a few days after the killings in Nova Scotia, that they were bringing in their gun control measures, and they wanted to use the information on what firearms the killer used to say, you see, this is why we have to get rid of all these things and why we're doing the right stuff. But again, we're not exactly certain about that. I think we have to be careful, especially if there's no corroboration. Mm-hmm. It's just he said, she said.
That's right. That's right. At this point, it's certainly all allegations at this point, which is, I think, maybe adding to the fervor a little bit more. Craig, let's pivot to a different story where the government this week announced that MPs would be getting personal panic buttons. The buttons could be used to alert the Parliamentary Protective Services or local police when politicians feel they're facing danger or a threat. Craig, what does this suggest to you about the state of political discourse in this country?
I think there's no doubt that our political discourse has become much more hostile, much more difficult, and also much more dangerous. The former head of the Canadian Public Service says that, and he was involved in the security side of all of this in his job, he said Canadians would be stunned if they realize the level of violence that is taking place in terms of conversation, in terms of what people are talking about in our politics. That, in other words, that politics has become a very hostile environment. And that's partly due, I guess, to all of what's going on online. But it's also just the fact that the partisanship has, I think, to some levels, gone out of control. I mean, we want to have passionate debates over issues that people care about. But if the subject becomes a threat of death threats, it stops there. We have to deal with that. And it's becoming increasingly likely that people who are perhaps misjudging the situation, or perhaps they're a little bit off key themselves, are making these death threats, including against almost everybody in the cabinet and the Prime Minister. And we're seeing this being acted out by people physically. The NDP leader followed down the street by a man shouting at him, wouldn't go away. The Prime Minister getting gravel thrown in his eyes, and the death threats, which I think when the conversation comes down to violent conversation, then that should not be happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Craig, you mentioned the Prime Minister. There was the incident at Rideau Hall a couple of years ago where somebody came with a truck loaded up with weapons to Rideau Hall to seek out the Prime Minister. There was the former Environment Minister, Catherine McKenna, who was confronted many times publicly while she was out with her family. It really speaks to the vitriol that's existing in a lot of our political messaging these days. And Craig, we've spoken a few times in the last few months about the pressures that are facing democracies. Maybe we looked at it more in a geopolitical sense than an internal sense. But how do stories like this, how does internal violence and vitriol add to those pressures that already exist?
Well, immensely. And I think the danger for the country is that people of great quality, who are people we would like to see in our politics, in our position of leading us, I think that many of them just would not be interested. The whole environment has become so hostile, as I say, that many good people don't want a part of it.
Mm.
That's I think, one of the outcomes of this kind of ugliness going on in our politics. There's just a lot out there that we don't know also. To what degree have police services and the military been infiltrated by far right language, far right thinking about where we want to be, and getting to the point where they're making all of these threats. At some point, somebody is going to go over the line.
Mm. Craig, this next story has the possibility of going deep, deep, deep into the weeds. So bear with me while I try to set it up a little bit. Earlier this week, Defense Minister Anita Anand announced the replacement for the North American Aerospace Defense Command's soon-to-be-obsolete North Warning System to track and respond to missile threats. The new system is going to be called Northern Approaches. Anand says that Canada has not deviated from its policy to avoid participating in the U.S. ballistic missile defense. Craig, I almost don't even know where to start here because we can get really deep into a lot of buzzwords and terminologies and acronyms. But let me start with this question. Is it realistic for Canada to not participate in a U.S. program?
Well, at the moment, we aren't cooperating with the U.S. on its missile operations. But the question is, can that continue? We are dropping the old northern
The North Warning System, which was under the NORAD command.
We're dropping that. It's become outdated. It was built for Russian bombers who slowly come over from Russia, and we have lots of time. The threat is new now. It is hypersonic missiles fired and going intercontinental in minutes. And how we deal with that, and the U.S. is coming up with this whole, as you know, the Space Force, and they would like us obviously to be part of it, because what happens once the missile is launched? What happens then? Somebody's got to knock it down. Who decides when it will be knocked down and where it'll be knocked down? Or if they can be knocked down, but presumably we're developing some kind of weapon, perhaps from space, from satellites, whatever, to knock them out before they get very far. But at the moment, we cooperate with everything happening in NORAD, as we have for years. But now it's missiles. And now can we sort of stay out of this new development? In the way we have always stayed out of the request by the Americans, and they've asked us often to cooperate in the case of missile protection. I don't know how we can continue to do that, even though we say we are still telling the Americans no. They would presumably like to have some kind of launchers on Canadian soil to try to knock these things down. But that's
right.
That's what the government's trying to avoid. They keep talking about defensive measures. But they're going to have to go beyond that to knock these things down, and where and who decides what.
Right. That's ultimately it, Craig, that simply identifying that there's a missile in the air is not enough. You need to be able to actually do something about that missile. There was a large press event that was done at earlier this week in Canada with the defense minister and a number of journalists. Craig, what do you think has been left out of this story in the way that it's been covered?
I think that's what's been left out. What kind of a role? Canada has played an intimate role in NORAD, and that really worked well for years. But are we going to be able to have the same kind of a relationship, or do we want to, with this new operation, this new high-tech protection from missiles fired from North Korea or Russia or who knows where? And many of these missiles, by the way, aren't necessarily nuclear. Which gives countries an option of damaging other countries and hitting their cities without doing it in a nuclear way. So we don't necessarily have to be thinking about nukes.
Right.
We're just
right.
thinking. And what we're seeing, these new high-tech missiles, the Russians are already using them in their war they're involved in. So that's what we have to wonder about. They're already using these weapons against the Ukrainians, so they're well developed, and we're going to have to start developing more of that ourselves, I guess.
Craig, let's finish on something of a lighter note with one question here in regards to members of parliament debating earlier this week whether or not politicians should be allowed to work remotely heading into the fall session. What do you think, Craig? Has the era of remote work in parliament come to an end?
To me, it wouldn't be parliament. We want to see their votes. We want to see their faces. We expect to see them dealing with each other. They don't have to agree, but at least working out problems together. I think that Parliament doesn't work if it's isolated, if each person is in his or her own little bubble. Parliament means people make decisions together. And if that doesn't happen, then it's not really Parliament. But that is certainly an important part of what's going on here.
Yeah.
Which is try to have a cooperative operation if you can, and have them there to vote, have them there where they can be seen by their constituents in the context of Parliament, not just out there on their own. Parliament's got to work better than that.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree, Craig, that at a certain point as we're returning to whatever normalcy is, asking politicians to come in and do what most other people are being asked to do makes sense to me. That's what being a leader is. You need to look like the population that you serve. Craig, thank you for your thoughts on all these topics today. I know we kind of ran a gamut there. Thank you, and we'll talk to you again next week.
You bet, Dave.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.